Welcome to 167 Hours Beyond Sunday, a podcast hosted by Crossroads Christian Church in Gray, Tennessee, where we try to go beyond the 1 hour we're in church a week and talk about what life looks like in the rest of the 167 hours. I'm your host. My name's Ryan Evans, and today I'm joined by our Connect Minister at Crossroads, Patrick Mitchell. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, man. Doing good. Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. You know, I think like Easter was a little bit of a joy, and then having student ministry, children ministry stuff back has been a joy. And like, you know, the sun is back and 60 to 70 degree weather, all the beautiful things.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it would be a downer. It's going to be like 48 degrees on Wednesday. Like, well, I don't, why? Why, God?
Because East Tennessee doesn't make up its mind. Yeah. So I was talking to someone yesterday. We're talking about, you know, that's the trick of East Tennessee. It could be 70 degrees in December and might get snow in April, and you just don't know.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, it's good to have the sun today. I plan on getting a tan.
There you go.
It'll happen.
So today we're going to spend some time talking about technology, specifically more of an emphasis on social media. And it's going to be fun. You know, I think our tendency or our temptation is probably going to be more on the negative side of this, just from the little bit of our conversation. But before we get into any of that, I just want to like a little bit of a glimpse of your social media history. Like, can you take us on a retrospective journey of young Patrick Mitchell exploring all the depths of social media throughout life?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'll do a deep dive. Man. So I think it's been fun growing up. So I'm 38. Which means, you know, I was going through like middle school and high school as cell phones were becoming a thing.
Yeah.
And like, I remember my dad having one of the bag phones in his truck, and I thought it was like awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I still remember my first Nokia phone, and it was the same one that everybody had, in high school. There were no options.
Yeah.
You know, everybody had the same thing.
Well, and I'm sure there's like at least a good chunk of time where social media wasn't even connected conceptually to a phone.
Oh no, not even in college.
Yeah,
your phone was to make sure you had gotten to school safely, and you know that was it.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say in college, that's when so Instant Messenger, you know, AOL Instant Messenger.
Oh yeah.
That was the thing, and for those that don't know, it was texting. Before there was texting.
Yeah, it was kind of
just
like
on a computer.
At that point, it was kind of like almost a rapid email correspondence. Yeah. And it was very much just like texting. And I'm very curious because I believe almost everyone had an embarrassing username. So
sure.
You remember what?
Oh, man. Patty Mitch 18. Yeah.
Dude, that's so much better than, okay. I mean, I think middle school, I was still on AIM, and mine was Coolio 57.
Coolio. That's nice. what I love is when I encounter adults who still clearly have like their first username is like still their email.
Oh yeah.
So I had like the, you know, Patty Mitch 18 email for a while too. And I can still remember Lindsay's, she was Southern Belle 24, but there were no vowels. So I remember that. And it was cool because on Instant Messenger, you could leave like an away message if people messaged you. And it was always like a song lyric, depending on your mood. It could be sappy, or I used a lot of Friends quotes, which for you younger people is a television show that was really funny. So I did Instant Messenger and then Zanga, which was like, I think they actually now produce blogging materials, but it was like blogging before there was blogging. It was here's a journal, keep an online journal that nobody wants to read.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, Facebook was interesting because Zuckerberg, you know, Mark and I are close. he's a couple years younger than me. And so when he was dropping out of Harvard and making millions, we were, I think it was like 04. I was a junior at Milligan. Uh-huh. And if it came out and we were like, this is stupid. Nobody's going to.
Well, I was curious before we even get to like, did you do the MySpace stuff?
I never
beforehand?
Did MySpace.
Okay.
I didn't.
Right.
I did not do MySpace.
See, that was like peak when I was in high school. Facebook was like breaking through, and it was kind of like, I'm not leaving MySpace. MySpace is the future. I got my top 8 friends list that I can let people know where they stand socially with me.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't do MySpace. I really don't, but yeah, Facebook, it was like, oh, this is going to be a thing. So I guess I'll be on Facebook then.
Yeah.
And you know, I had Twitter Probably got Twitter in 08, I think, is it reminds you every time when you joined.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been fairly active on Twitter. It can be a bit of a dumpster fire at times. And then I had Instagram for a little while, but I'm now off the gram.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, you just hit all the big ones. I mean, Snapchat is a thing. I don't know if you ever played in that space or not.
I've not played in it. I have watched people's thumbs go crazy, and I don't get it. I have a hard time with it.
Yeah, I spent about a month on Snapchat before I was like, nah.
Yeah.
I don't need this. And you know, and even like, we could probably do an entire episode on just like on Facebook, mm-hmm. and how it's morphed and changed. Like, I was looking back when I was in college, and there's almost no pictures. There's almost no, like, it was all just very, it was almost like Twitter in a sense, where a lot of people are just updating things with phrases and stuff like that. It's interesting to see where it's all come.
Yeah. Yeah. It's obviously more fast paced now, you know, with Twitter was fast paced because it's, mm-hmm. you know, you only get the 140 characters and whatnot. But watching, you know, I say watching kids these days do the Snapchat, it's just like so fast, and they're taking pictures of the ceiling, and like, just, I don't gotta keep my streak alive, which is kind of how I feel about MyFitnessPal. You know, I don't know if that counts.
It's a better streak to keep alive. It's like, way more healthy.
At the end of the day, I'm like, oh, I got to put in how much water I drink so I keep my streak alive.
There you go. It's so interesting to see how that's all kind of come along. So I think I've already said this, it would be easy for us to focus on the negative. So I want to start with the positive.
Hmm.
So what do you think are some of the benefits of social media for our world?
Yeah. I mean, on one scale, I think it kind of lessens the gap, you know, between everyday people and celebrities. So they're, mm-hmm. they're sort of like, you get to, I'm not talking about like Instagram influencers. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about people who are actually mostly real, from what you can tell on social media. So you get an insight into like, oh, this is what a celebrity's life when they're, is, you know, when they're not doing this, like they actually have kids and people in their families die, and you know, so there's some of that like I think ties some people together. I just enjoy the connectivity of it. You know, we've lived across the country in different places, and it's nice to be able to keep up with each other.
Yeah.
You know, see each other's kids, and like when we lived in LA, none of us had kids yet, and so it's been really fun being able to watch each other's kids grow up. You know, via that, and talk to each other and message, and that's been fun. You know, I think for entrepreneurs, being able to use social media as a means for building a base, you know, on that front, or, you know, even the gospel message being able to get out. I know some have said like, oh, this is the way that it's going to reach the ends of the earth. And I'm like, well, until there's Wi-Fi and satellite in some of these remote places, I'm not sure that's it. But man, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg was thinking, you know what, Facebook's going to become one of the primary tools for the church to, you know,
when he was using it to rate females' attractiveness,
hot
levels.
Or not. probably not what he was thinking. So, I think in general, you know, the means is for connectivity and then dialogue. I mean, I love the fact that I'm exposed to different viewpoints and vantage points. That it's honestly, I can log on to Twitter and in 10 minutes, you know, find stuff or read something that I wouldn't have found in years.
Yeah.
And it sparked a thought, or it's, you mm-hmm. know, made me ask a question of myself, or like, huh, maybe I should look at this. But, so I think that's a huge value, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, something you didn't mention, but it's probably worth noting after a year like we just had, I think, granted, I'm not sure if you can count Zoom and social media realm, but you know, the ability to video chat and connect with people through that means was incredibly valuable for a year where the other option wasn't super available.
Yeah.
Not the same. Trust me, I think we're all ready to be done with Zoom meetings. No one was meant to see their own face while they're talking to others.
Yeah.
There's a lot of mental unhealth in that.
Yes. I'm a fan of hiding self view, on Zoom, but, just all those advances, you know, I'm sure one leads to another, leads to another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm grateful, you know, for those who have the minds that can think through those things. But let's be clear, you know, the number one priority for any of these folks is money.
Yes. So, and that's, yes, we could.
They want to monetize your addiction, you know.
And what's funny is the people who even don't like Facebook still use Facebook to complain about it. So there's great irony and all that. I didn't want to get negative, but you know, I will take a moment to say these things are optional. You don't have to participate with them. For everyone who's annoyed at Facebook, just don't use it anymore. You'll be fine. So if you were going to, again, before we get to the negative, if you were going to imagine a perfect, productive social media participation, so like your most ideal version of that, what would it look like?
Face chat, Snapbook. Just bringing all the different platforms together. I mean, my hope, if I'm imagining it, would just be truly productive conversations in which, you know, it's one thing like, you know, a Twitter, like recently Tim Keller, who's a retired pastor in New York, he's kind of, I don't know that he's been given a death sentence with his cancer diagnosis, but it's definitely a possibility.
Yeah.
And so he sort of, I think, felt a little freer lately to express opinions on various things. And man, it's just like it can be, this thread on Twitter can have 150 replies and conversations. And I'm not sure that's what it's intended for.
Yeah.
And so I just think to myself, okay, what's the purpose of each of these platforms? Ideally, we would match that, you know, with the platform, and conversations could really be, and ultimately the social media participation comes down to the person.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll talk about some of that later, but people really being willing to listen more than talk and trying to understand, you know, more than defend or put someone in their place. We're a long ways from that, I think, as we've seen, especially this last year.
You know, that I have seen a few threads of comments and conversations that are very productive and kind and thoughtful. That is unfortunately not the vast majority of what I've experienced. And one of the things I had to choose at a certain point for myself was to take, I really try to stay off as Facebook unless I'm doing something for work at this point, because mm-hmm. for me, the net cons were outweighing the pros because I'm someone who really wears tension. So if I witness arguments or I witness counterproductive conversations, I'll carry it. So that's just that's tricky. So now let's get to what we honestly really want to emphasize, you know, the potential dangers. What are some of the largest pitfalls that you've observed? Obviously, social media is inherently not evil or good. It's just how we use it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the consequences of how we've been using it?
Yeah. I mean, it is neutral in terms of its morality, right? So there's no evil or good inherent to it. It is what we make of it. And some of the pitfalls, and I can speak to this from having worked in education as well as in the church and working with all age groups. And it's fascinating for me because I don't see a lot of difference in the pitfalls from teenagers to, you know, octarians, to 80-year-olds. It's the same pitfalls are there. You know, there's, I call it screen courage. I will say things, am tempted to say things from behind a screen that I would
probably never
say to someone's face directly.
Mm-hmm.
I would happily say it behind their backs if we were in the same room, but I wouldn't walk up to them and say, hey, LOL, comment, you know, emoji, and just drop it on them like I would if I were on a screen. There is such, so in my mind, there's cowardice is a pitfall. You know, because we are going to say things that we would never say.
Yeah, it is kind of, it's interesting. It's almost like a false courage, like a not true courage.
I've taken a stand on the Facebook.
Which is very discouraging, especially as Christians who are representatives of Christ. Sometimes there will be people that I have an immense amount of respect for that I will see post things that I think, whoa, that wasn't thoughtful.
yeah.
or helpful. Also, I didn't know that you spoke these specific words.
Yeah, there's a cringe factor when it comes to this pitfall in particular. So I think that's one, just that it really is a cowardice.
So is the question, if would you say this same thing to the person's face? And if you can, I don't think if you can say yes to that, you should post it. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a really good measure, just a standard, you know, quick to listen, slow to speak. I think applies to what we type or text as well. And
which is hilarious because you can actually read what you type before you post it. Like it should be more thoughtful than what you say. It doesn't seem to be that way though.
No. And I think with that, you know, this last year, the tribalism has been at an all time high. And so I think one of those temptations is to a pitfall. And this is probably more for Facebook, I would say, than some others. And it is still the one that I think most, you know, 30 to 80 year olds are on.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just that tribalism danger where you group, you know, us, them, it's very combative and there has to be an enemy. And it is very clear, you know, it doesn't take long on someone's Facebook wall to find out who at least they identify as. And unfortunately, you know, for those in the church, it doesn't appear to be Christian on many fronts. It's very much politically charged. And that to me, I think, is the sad part because the world is watching.
Yeah.
And man, not a lot of charity in our words.
The unfortunate truth about Facebook and a lot of social media is, like you said earlier, the people who are behind it, at the end of the day, their priority is money.
Mm-hmm.
So they want engagement.
Right.
Likes, clicks, commenting. Mm-hmm. So a lot of platforms, including Facebook, actually to a certain degree reward extremism and outrage.
100%. 100%.
Because that's what gets the most engagement. And on top of that, it's also worth recognizing that the robots know you.
Yes.
they've read into everything you've clicked on and every website you visited, and they're catering things around you. And you know, so if you go on Facebook and think, I'm using this to form a full perspective worldview, no, you're not. You're actually getting mostly extremism designed to get you to engage with it.
Right.
And it doesn't care if it's healthy or not.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of one Facebook session, you know, whether you're on your phone or computer, you could look back and you may have 10 windows open because you followed the blue link, you know, the clickbait stuff to this, to this, to this, to this. And it's all going to be saying pretty much the same thing. And by the time you're done, you're like, yeah, I was right. And it's all to affirm, you know, what you thought in the first place. And I know I'm pretty sure Zuckerberg has denied that those things happen. And I don't think Congress can get in there and figure out the algorithms necessarily. I think that's protected, but,
watch any of that actual interaction? It was very clear that most of the Congress members have no idea how the internet works.
No, it reminds me of the commercials where it's like the grannies that are like putting pictures on their walls at home and they're like, I posted on my wall.
Yes,
that's what it feels like on some of those fronts. But you know, a constituent has written with a concerned email and, or somebody that has money and has said, I need you to do this. But you know, there's the Social Dilemma documentary that's out there, which is really about, you know, these people that have worked on the inside, these women and men, and it's the monetization of it. It is, the goal is to get you addicted. There's no, you know,
they want you to engage so they can make more
without shame.
Money.
We want you to be addicted to this. And the irony of it is, you know, a lot of these leaders in the industry, you know, going back to Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they didn't let their kids have these technologies because they knew. And it's like, well, you know, we're the sheep on that front if we go along with it. So addiction is definitely a pitfall.
That's a great information. Just a good documentary choice, a Social Dilemma, if you're like looking for more information, because we're not going to be able to cover it. Half of this in depth. That's 80% of it in depth. 90% of this we can't cover in depth. We've gotten through two pitfalls, and we've talked
and that's
a long
scientific.
Time.
Those are scientific measures. Yeah. Yeah.
So, are there any other pitfalls you want to hit before we move on?
I mean, I think I could talk about the addiction of it all day long, which, you know, leads to some of the things we'll talk about. But man, watching teenagers with the fundamental inability to have a face-to-face conversation. I like watching it happen at times. It really is astounding. And then, which means there's going to be generational issues because, you know, my generation, and then, which I'm an old, one of the oldest millennials, and then younger, you know, and Gen Z and stuff. It's can't not being able to have conversations across generational lines.
Yeah.
Is crazy, you know, whereas I grew up and I could do that, you know, and I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, this isn't happening at all, you know, to a great degree. Most young people think old people are dumb, and old people are looking at young people thinking, what's wrong with you? And, you know, again, it's like there's no conversation.
Yeah,
even though we have the connection.
It's the great irony is that we think we're more connected, but in some ways we're more disconnected. And you know, you mentioned kids. One of the things that terrifies me, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, is I was listening to a podcast the other day, and it was two females that were speaking with each other, and they just started casually, because they were talking over a video chat, I think like a Zoom.
Yeah.
And one of them's like, hey, did you know that you can, you know, you don't have to worry about putting on makeup and stuff anymore. There's these filters you can just apply to your video chat, and it just makes you look better. And I thought, oh, what? That's terrible. But you know, think that's an Instagram thing. That's a so even beyond just the emotional capacity of people's ability to be authentic, just physical capacity to be authentic. You know, face to face conversations are terrifying because I can't hide behind my filters.
Yeah. I get that. My kids use like the shark filter on my wife's phone. So that's the only thing I know about filters and that, but, it is pretty crazy, man. They know, like, all of these developers know exactly what to do to get that next, you know, up in usership.
Yeah. So I'm going to start throwing some statements at you, and I'm just kind of curious. I want to hear your kind of base feedback when you hear something. All right.
Yeah.
So here's the first one. Despite being more connected than we've ever been, we're statistically lonelier and more depressed than ever before.
Yeah. I would say, you know, my experience in being around folks matches the statistics. There's the tagline associated with Starbucks and these other, you know, what used to be called the third space or the third place. You know, you had a home, school and church or something like that. And then it was like, oh, the coffee shop, where everyone's got headphones in. And it's that tagline of everyone's alone together.
Yeah.
And like, I want to be around other people, but not with other people. You know, I just want to be in their presence, but I don't want to be in too much proximity or conversation. And I think with that comes, you know, talking about the loneliness, the depression, even the social anxiety built up around, whoa, what's going to happen if I have a conversation in person?
Yeah. I have to actually be vulnerable and authentic.
Right.
I can't.
It's really easy to posture and to project via social media. I've talked with some about this effect with, and I say teenage girls, it can be guys as well. I've seen it more.
Yeah. Statistically, males are actually the worst side of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think maybe that's just because of the whole, like, for lack of better terminology, toxic masculinity that, like, I've got to pretend like I'm fine and good regardless of the situation.
Yeah, and I'm speaking not even on that. Like, I have no doubt that it's more affecting on males there, but the effect with teenage girls on, I have to present this image in order to get the attention.
Can't imagine,
right? And confusing that attention for affection, and I think that's what I've seen, you know, in the last 6 or 7 years or so working in the schools and working closely with teenagers is, man, the lengths to which some of these girls feel like they've got to go to get the attention, to feel like they're being not even, I don't think loved, you know, but like they're getting, the affection that they desire and they crave, which is God given and is there, they desire it and for good reason. But man, just seeing like, you know, the arching of the back and the lips and like, I just,
and again, the filters
and the, and filters, like, I don't,
what is that going to do to a young woman's psyche that they get hundreds of likes on a photo that's an inauthentic, dishonest version of themselves.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think it perpetuates that stereotype that I am unlovable as I am. And guys can feel that. I have felt that, you know. I'll be as vulnerable about that as I can, but
yeah, it's hard. It's hard when you, if you're on Instagram for any period of time and you see pictures of even other guys in the gym and stuff, you're like, that I how?
Yeah.
How does one do this?
I just assume they're all on steroids and don't have jobs, and that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
They have full-time trainers and chefs, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it is, I mean, I'm referencing statistics I'm not providing, and I apologize. You can find these pretty easily just by Googling it.
Google it.
But like there's correlation between generations, and it being stronger on the male side. It is interesting that it seems like those who have, you merely adopted the social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gen Zers were born in it, raised in it. And they don't, you know, in the younger generations, the statistics are going up. I think 4 in 5 was the last statistic I heard on kids feeling lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes. That's not like 1 in 5. That's most of them.
Yeah. I'm not a scientist, but that sounds high. like high numbers, and you do, you know, you're watching. I know more kids are getting referred to obviously their primary care. You know, they're being more medicated, seeing child psychologists, therapists, and I'm sorry, the world itself has not changed. Like there is nothing new under the sun. I really believe that, but technology, I think, exacerbates what's already there to a degree that it's just like, man, we're not equipped to handle it. We're just not made for that.
Well, not to mention, most technology at this point is designed and catered to be specific to your desires and wants. And so, you know, I've mentioned this a few times on the podcast. What terrifies me is we're raising up children in a generation where basically everything is catered to what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that, you know, especially more on my side of the millennial generation, we see people my age really struggling in the workforce because what do you mean I have to do things I don't want to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's said now that, gosh, I can't remember the exact, Google this. This podcast brought to you by Google, not officially. you know, that, and the average person now going into the workforce is going to change not just jobs, but industries like 10 to 12 times.
Yeah.
You're going to cross over like kids that are going now through school into the workforce, which is just insane.
That is really interesting to think about.
And some of that is, you know, I don't have the longevity. I don't have the patience to stay in something. It gets hard. I bail. I don't get the like. I don't get the gratification, you know. I don't get that, the dopamine rush.
For real.
I'm out, you know, I'll go find it somewhere else. And I did some of that in ministry, kind of the greener grass, you know, scenarios, and can look back now with, you know, very mature insight and know that, oh, I was just a fool. I was being really foolish and immature about that. So I can't imagine, you know, and I've got 4 kids that I'm going to be raising in the midst of it. And Lindsay and I are navigating, what does that look like? And our kids' friends in elementary school have smartphones.
Yeah.
And they're like, we'll shut that down right now. Can we get a watch that, nope, I'll give you a watch. You can learn how to tell Roman numeral time. That's what you can do.
I mean, something that we've been really intentional about with Ellie is not letting her watch a lot of screens yet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to sound ironic, but we very intentionally don't allow her to watch kids, modern kids programming.
Yeah.
Because you know how all that ADD, ADHD stuff is getting in more intense. Well, I want you to imagine a scenario. You put someone with a developing brain in front of a screen where it's really colorful, constantly flashing, everything's really intense, moving around a bunch, and their brain develops consuming this information.
Yep.
And then you try to put them in a classroom where there's not a bunch of colors and not a bunch of movements and ask them to focus.
Yeah. And then you send them to the doctor where they get diagnosed, medicated, and they get, you know, allowances made on their standardized testing. That's the trajectory. And I truly believe there is a movement in education. Charlotte Mason, she was a British educator. And the whole argument was developmentally, you know, kids don't need to be in a classroom until they're 7 or 8. And at that point, only for a couple hours a day. They need to be outside, nature, imagination. And that is all true. And unfortunately, our industrialized complex, you know, has completely altered that to the detriment of society. That's a different podcast. That's a bit off topic, but I can,
we're jumping around a lot today.
I can spit on some of these things too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, gosh, yeah, we could do a whole episode on just kids and the different interactions. Yeah. I agree, past Ryan, but unfortunately for you and our listeners, you and Patrick talked way too long, so this is going to be our first two-parter in the 167 history. But stick around, because next week I think the rest of this conversation is fantastic and worth listening to. But thank all of you for joining us for part one of this conversation. And thank you, Patrick, for the fantastic conversation. If you're on iTunes and don't mind, please give us a 5-star rating and a review. And if you want to keep up with all of Crossroads activities and find more content, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can find us by searching Crossroads Christian. There are all kinds of content for adults, kids, and teenagers. But more than all of that, please make the most of the rest of your 167 hours. Have a great week.